Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Your Equity podcast, where investors with a special emphasis on couples begin, continue, and deepen their journey to financial freedom together using the powerful vehicle of real estate investing to do it. Today, we've got a weathered veteran on the show. His name is Jeff Greenberg, and Jeff is the CEO of the Synergistic Investment Group, LLC, SIG for short. And for the past 12 years, he's managed all aspects of commercial real estate ownership, including acquisitions, operations, value adds, dispositions, and investor relations. So SIG currently focuses on helping high net worth individuals passively invest in the best in class commercial deal syndications and invest in commercial real estate itself. SIG uses its extensive experience to help investors determine the overall merits of an investment opportunity. And Jeff has run REI meetups since 2005. And more currently, he is helping to run the Multifamily Masters in Ventura in Southern California. He's been featured as a speaker on over 35 podcasts, including three times on Best Ever, which is awesome, and on Bigger Pockets. And he's also very active on Clubhouse and moderates rooms on Tuesdays and Thursday. So Jeff, very impressive resume, but we are so honored to have you here. And how is your day going today?
Well, it was going well until my son was working on the air conditioning, and all of a sudden, everything in the room went blank. I was in a Zoom session and everything went blank. And then bringing it back up, of course, the power came back up, but of course, the internet didn't for a while. And we just made it in the nick of time to get onto the podcast. So besides that, my day was going great before that happened.
You know, Jeff, I'm just going to chalk this up to divine intervention. I think this was meant to be. That's kind of how it is, right?
It must have been, because this is the third time we've tried to get together and do this. So we finally got it, third time's a charm, and I'm glad that we're able to do this.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that you're here too, Jeff. So let's start at the very beginning, like we always like to, and then we'll see where we go from there. So how did you get interested and start investing in real estate? Where was that spark?
Well, it actually was on a hike with a friend. We were hiking and he said that he was going to get into real estate. And as naive as I was, I had no clue. I thought real estate was you go out and you buy a single family home, you rent it out, and then you go and look for more. And I had no idea what fix and flips were. I had no idea what BRRRR was. I have no idea what anything else. I didn't know who owned these commercial properties around the city, you know? And so that was what I was looking to do. I was going through a divorce. And so I was evaluating my financial situation, since my ex was going to get the house and I was going to get to hang on to my retirement. So I was evaluating that. And so I started exploring different aspects of real estate to learn, I guess, about the different aspects of real estate, because I didn't know anything.
Jeff, what were you doing prior to that spark?
Well, even after I was doing the real estate, I was still in IT. I was in IT for the first 8 years of doing real estate and just retired about 4 years ago. And so I continued for 8 years working commercial real estate, and then finally decided one day to tell my boss that I wasn't coming back. It was a funny story, because it was during my review. We had annual reviews. I got a very good review. And in fact, he was going to give me a new assignment. And he said, okay, here, this is a new product coming in. I want you to train these people. I want you to lead this project. And I kind of just looked at him and said, no. I said, his name is Dave. I said, Dave, no. I said, I'm giving you 60 days notice. And the only reason I gave him 60 days notice is I knew bonuses were coming around. And I just wanted to stick around until I got the bonus. So I gave him 60 instead of 30, or I could have given him 2 weeks, whatever. But yeah. And he kind of looked at me and then he knew it, because he knew I was doing real estate, and he just realized, you know, what was going on. But my gray matter just wasn't into IT anymore. And IT, you're always learning new things. There's always new stuff. There's so many things that you have to think about. And all I wanted to do is to spend my gray matter on learning real estate.
Awesome.
And so it was just tough that, you know, I had to pull away from it. But
and Jeff, a lot of our listeners are, you know, they want to go into real estate because they're seeing it as a vehicle to exit their corporate, the W-2. How did it feel in that moment where you're like, Dave, no, here's my notice?
It certainly was scary. You know, one of the things you always think about when you're going off on your own, I think a big thing that stops people from leaving a W-2 is their health insurance. And so that's always, you know, making sure that you can afford to pay for the health insurance. And so, you know, that's a big thing. So you're concerned about that. Are you going to be able to pay your own bills? Because I was raised, you know, go to school, get a college degree, get a good job, hang on to that job forever and retire. Well, after reading Kiyosaki's book, I think it changed a lot of people to realize that maybe that's not the safest thing to do and maybe not the best thing to do. And so when you're bucking the system or bucking what you were raised as or to believe, it's difficult. My brother was an entrepreneur, but the rest of us, you know, all went to school and got jobs. So it's hard when you're changing your beliefs.
So Jeff, was there a moment when you first started investing in real estate? Because you said that you were going through a divorce at the time and you had retirement money. You were starting to look at houses for yourself to be able to probably live in. That would be my guess if I was in your shoes and you didn't have any real estate investing experience then. So you don't have anyone in your family that's done real estate as an investment vehicle intentionally. Where did it come in that you decided from that point forward? This is back, like, you know, before you got into the commercial, right? And you were doing maybe single families back then. Where did you realize that this was actually a viable side business? How did you find that spark? And when was the aha? Where did you get that?
Well, I mean, right away, I knew that I was doing this as a business. I wasn't so concerned about where I was going to live. There was places I could stay or rent a room or whatever it was. And I did rent a room in somebody else's house for a while we were going for divorce, where I was trying to figure things out. But I didn't want to spend my money on a house for myself because I didn't feel that was going to be an appropriate investment. I didn't want to get into fix and flips because I still had the W-2 job. I don't have the carpentry skills or the skills necessary to do that. So I really never had an interest in that part of it. I mean, I did, you know, look at properties that I would have had to hire someone to do, but that's basically the direction that I was going on that. But I actually never did buy a single family home as far as an investment property. The only residential property I bought was my own personal properties. But this was around in 2005, 2006, and prices were starting to drop, especially out here in California, that we were going into the recession. And so looking at single family homes I was looking at REOs, I was looking at bank owned, and the banks didn't know what to do with them. They had so many properties, they had no clue. So it would take a long time before they would do anything. I made an offer and it took 2 or 3 months before they accepted. And then when I went under contract and I did an inspection and say, okay, I want a repair allowance because of all this and this, took another couple months before they came back and did a counteroffer. Well, by that time, the price of the property had gone down so much that my profit had disappeared. And so I said, well, this isn't going to work. Yeah. And that's when I heard somebody I heard a guru talking about commercial real estate and the ability to use other people's money. And that's when the light went off that I could use my money to educate myself. I could use my money to get into deals, but for the most part, get my money back and be able to leverage other people's money and leverage my knowledge. And I said, that sounds like the way to go. And so that's when I started going towards a commercial real estate.
That's really good. So Jeff, it sounds like your decision-making on all of this was very logical. There's a lot of people that start in this business with the emotional side first, because it's the easiest thing to relate with. And so therefore what people end up doing is they start in the single families just because it's something that's relatable and comfortable to them, right? So it sounds like you tried to maybe do something in the space like that, but you went straight to commercial. So is there anything that you can, or any advice that maybe you have for the listeners? Because I know that one of the things that I would have known if I had a time machine, right, I would go back in time and tell myself, go into commercial right away. Single family was good. It served a purpose, but I think that it's well worth it to jump straight into multifamily. What would you say to people like that who are maybe don't know anything about real estate, but want to recommend to them that they should go into commercial first?
Well, the big problem I had is I'm out here in Southern California, and to try to go into single family home is crazy. It's just to get a cash flowing property. In fact, I had a meeting with a broker out here and I said, okay, I wanted to buy a duplex or I wanted to buy a fourplex. And I sat down with her and her husband and I said, okay, I want to buy a fourplex and I want to buy, it needs to be cash flowing. And they looked at me and I said, well, any property could be cash flowing.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was sitting there, well, wait a minute, now what do I say? And they said, you just need to put down enough.
Yeah.
So right. you put 50% down or something. Yeah, it's going to cash flow. Otherwise, yeah, it's not going to cash flow. That's how little I knew. I had no clue about that and realized that, yeah, if I put 50 or 60% down, yeah, it's going to cash flow. So I realized that California was just a real tough place to do things. And so other people that maybe are in a better location, they're close to places where they could do some single families and duplex and triplex and quads, you know, that's fine. I don't feel it's the fastest way to accelerate. I don't think that it's really something that's really going to expand your business. I agree with you that you don't need single family homes to jump into commercial. There are plenty of lessons that you can learn just going directly into commercial. And that doesn't mean you have to go into a huge commercial, but you certainly don't have to be in a single or a duplex or a quad, you know, residential. The first property we bought was a 20 unit. That was in Texas. Now, I would suggest if you have the opportunity to maybe JV with somebody where you're not bringing investors in, that isn't what we did. We syndicated it, which meant that we had obligations to our investors, which means that there wasn't much meat on the table for us. So that's why I suggest a JV might be a better way of going.
Yeah.
If you could both come in with some money and you're both making money rather than having to pay the investors. But I do like the idea of going straight into a multifamily deal and learning from there and then going from there. And then I went from a 20 to a 60 to some small student housing and then to a 225 unit, which was a leap. But the main thing is going in with somebody that has experience would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
If you could go in and be a minor player with somebody that's done it dozens of times. And the key is finding what you can bring to the table. You know, either you're going to be, you know, bringing in investors or maybe you found the deal and bring the deal to that investor and where they could help you get it closed and all these other things, because that's where you learn. You learn as an apprentice or as a, you know, as a co-GP. I think that's the best way to do it. You know, you could read books, you could go to boot camps, you could do all of that stuff, but you're not going to learn nearly as much until you go and get into a deal and are physically working on a deal.
Yeah, that is great advice. That's exactly what I tell most people to do when they want to get involved in commercial real estate and have cash, but don't know what to do with it. Like obviously syndication is one way to do it, but if you know someone in a market that you trust well, you may be able to get superior returns and, Jeff, might I add, a superior education as well. Mm-hmm, if you do a JV and you have, if the person that you're looking for or the person that you're partnering with, all they need is cash, then that's a perfect match, a blend of experience and knowledge and time with the cash. And so that's exactly right. I think that's a perfect thing to mention those people.
Yeah, because if you have some cash, you can go in and JV with somebody. And if you have some net worth, you can help, you know, sign on the loans, qualify for the loans and that kind of stuff. But the other thing that I tell people, and some people, you know, is, oh, I got $600,000 and I want to get, I said, first of all, stop telling people that you have money. Okay. You know, you could use some of that for your education. I have no problem, you know, going to conferences and, well, books don't cost much. Podcasts are free. You know, there's a lot of good education there. But, you know, you don't have to go and use all your money. You can use some of your money. I know people that come in and they put their money at risk money, which is earnest money. You know, they'll maybe help with the down payment. And because of that, they now get GP shares for putting in the risk money. Maybe they come in and pay for the inspections and stuff. And so because of that, they get shares. But also, yeah, if you know other people that have money, you can bring them in through the syndication. There's all kinds of things that you can do that get you involved in the deal and to learn about it. But that's, you know, that's the whole thing. You don't have to use all your money. You know, I say use your own money sparingly. Certainly you can invest alongside of everybody else, but education is the most important thing.
Jeff, I couldn't agree with you more there. And I think that what you just mentioned is just, this is gold for a lot of people who are looking to start out. And this is why I keep emphasizing the importance of your network. The more people you know, the more opportunities you're going to have to be able to match up what you have to offer to what someone's looking for. So I think that's really, really important. And I couldn't agree with everything else. Couldn't agree more with everything else that you had just said. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you too, it's been burning in my mind ever since you started telling your story, was you have an IT job that you'd left 4 years ago and you're in commercial real estate. And you said that your very first deal was a syndication, which is really impressive, to be honest, because it takes a lot of knowledge and takes expertise to put that all together. There's a lot of moving pieces. What was your personal life like at home while you were trying to do that? Did you have a personal life, or were you like focusing on work and then going straight to syndications and going to seminars and meeting people? Takes a lot of effort to get this ball rolling, even for your first one. So give us a little bit of an insight of what that was like when you started.
Yeah, it was difficult, but the advantage that I had that some people don't is, as I said, I was going through divorce. My kids are all grown. They're all adults. And I only had me to worry about. I had no other responsibilities besides myself. And that made it a lot easier for me. I didn't have a significant other. I didn't have the young children around. And I really applaud those people that do, because it is a balancing act. And I applaud you guys for being able to work together. If I would have been still married, that wouldn't have been a good situation, because my significant other, I'm sure, was not going to be supportive of it. As it was, I spent way too much time on the computer, and that was usually one of the complaints that I heard, was how much time I spent playing on the computer. It was always playing. It wasn't working. It wasn't doing research or getting education. I was playing. So that would have never worked with me and my relationship. And because this podcast is kind of about relationships and stuff, I think that's so important that you guys are on the same page, and so important that you have that conversation and make sure that you have the same goals and that you're trying to get to the place and you understand how you're going to get there, because there's going to be plenty of times that you're spending way too much time in the business and, you know, you have to go back and remember that you got a relationship and you want to maintain that. Now, if you guys are having fun working this business together, that is so much better. That is beautiful. That is beautiful. And I envy anybody that is able to do that and do this business with their spouse. That's beautiful. You know, it's just, you have to look at that situation. Now, there's a lot of spouses I know that just are uninvolved. They don't resent it. They say, okay, that's great. You know, I'm happy about it, but they may not be involved. And, you know,
but the truth of the matter, situation. The truth of the matter is, Jeff, is that even for those of you who out there are listening to this right now, and you're saying, oh, I can totally relate with what Jeff just said. Like, my spouse is just kind of there. I would back up a little bit and think a little bit more about that, because if your spouse is allowing you to do this, they're probably taking care of stuff for you. Like, they're probably cooking for you. They're probably taking care of the kids for you. or they're probably allowing you to work on that, you know, on your business or research it. So they're giving you the physical, the mental, and the time space to be able to pursue all that, right? So I would say that to your spouse, you can even thank them and acknowledge them for doing that, even if they're not actively participating. That is still a partnership because there are ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And recognizing them for that and showing your appreciation that they're allowing you to do that. That is an excellent point.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just wanting to comment that, like, we've had a lot of conversations, and there were definitely conversations where I'm like, you're on the computer a lot and wondering what he's doing. And until, you know, and so, yeah, I totally resonate what you said in terms of, you know, it does take a lot of just mental awareness and really good communication skills to get to the same page. And so for the couples out there listening, it's just really important to have like those monthly meetings, weekly meetings, and just to really enhance that communication. So Jeff, also, like you said earlier that you started with syndication, but you scaled up, and it sounds like, you know, I just wanted to ask your advice. What does it take from a mindset perspective to scale up at that level at each step of the scale?
Well, I think Derek has already said it. It's your network. Mm. It's just, I talk a lot about your comfort level. You don't grow in your comfort zone, and you need to be okay with being uncomfortable, because I could say that I've been uncomfortable every step of the way. And being able to push yourself and be in uncomfortable situations. On that 225 unit, I had $200,000 of my money that was going hard. We didn't have all the money raised, and I was supposed to be going on a cruise that I was about to lose $8,000 if I didn't go on the cruise. So what is this? I lose $8,000 or I lose $200,000. You know, you can figure that the cruise kind of went bye-bye, because there was no refunds. You know, certainly you have that comfort level and not knowing how you were going to raise that money. And it ends up, you know, a lot of it is your network. And that's what saved me, is my network, somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody. And we worked it all together. We got the money raised. We got the deal closed. But that was a lot of stress. And the thing is you have to be willing to give things up as well. I ended up giving up a lot of shares, you know, of the GP to get people to take on roles that I needed. And getting a small piece out of a big pie is better than getting, you know, nothing out of no pie. And people have to realize that. And that's what that deal took.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit more. I wanted to explore like the person you were and the person you've become because of this real estate investing. Okay. And so, you know, obviously you said that you worked in IT for a long time. What would you say for those listeners out there and who maybe can relate with you on the IT side, what type of skills did you bring from that business or from what you did as your full-time job into the real estate investing space, in the syndication space specifically?
I had good analytic skills. I always liked math, and I was good with spreadsheets and that kind of stuff. That was, you know, the big thing. I had the big picture. I partnered up with somebody that was much more detailed oriented. So that helped things out. We always talked about it, that if it was up to her, we would have never gotten into any deals, because she was way too conservative. And if it was up to me, we probably would have gotten into deals and screwed up, because I was more big picture. But still the analytical part. And I took a spreadsheet that I got from a guru. And by the time I got through with it, five years later, you would never recognize it with all the different features that I added. That was the fun part. I enjoyed redesigning the spreadsheet and redoing things and all kinds of stuff. And then I found another spreadsheet somebody else had that I liked better, but still I enjoyed that part of it. But the part that people aren't going to believe is I have always been an introvert. I was always a wallflower. Wow. I always had difficulty talking to people. Networking was painful for me. And it was, you know, the first time I was helping this friend of mine run a club. And the first time that he said, oh, okay, you take the lead, sweaty palms, my heart's beating. And there was only 20 people in the room. And I'm sitting there, oh my God. And, you know, and fast forward, I've been up on stage with, you know, maybe a couple thousand people. And, you know, it doesn't bother me at all now. And nowadays, you know, I'll go networking. I'll walk up to people and say, hi, how you doing? I'll start talking to them. My friends that have known me, you know, all my life, they know the change. They see the change and, you know, they're pretty amazed about it. But the thing is as an introvert, that was just unacceptable to me in the business that I knew that I had to walk up to people and just talk. And I learned to do that. And as I became more knowledgeable, of course, it became easier because I had more things to talk about. And I took my son one time to an event and he's very quiet. During the break, everybody's out networking and he's kind of standing around his seat. I said, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm just taking a break. I said, why aren't you out talking to people? And he goes, I don't have anything to offer. What can I, you know, how can I offer anything to anybody? And he said, that's not the point. You ask them. All you have to do is ask somebody what they're doing, you know, what they're doing in this business. And they're going to sit there and talk away because people love talking about themselves. And then you go into it and then more than likely they're going to ask about you. And okay, you could say you're new and you're just learning, whatever. But, you know, to go out there and just to have that conversation and to get started. And that's so important. And I talk to a lot of people that are in similar situations. Oh, I'm really shy. I don't, you know, I'm not, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Get over it. You know, that's just it. You got to get over it because networking is so important that you're pushing yourself out of the comfort zone. If you have to go to a Toastmasters group, great. I don't know if you're familiar with Toastmasters. That's where people get up and you talk. You learn how to have a conversation. You learn how to talk to people and learn how to do it without ums and ahs and how to do it without fidgeting and all kinds of things. And you get in, you're being put outside of your comfort zone. You will be put in situations and that's going to help you grow. That's the whole thing. You get into situations where you stand up in front of people and that's how you're going to grow is by being uncomfortable. You do not grow in your comfort zone.
Jeff, that's amazing. What great advice. And I loved how you framed that too, because, you know, when we're talking about introversion, oftentimes, you know, we may use that as a story, right? To stay back in our comfort zone and reinforce kind of old belief patterns. But what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to be curious. Maybe that we need that reframe, right? To be curious about what other people are doing. And maybe that's an access point out of that old model to kind of help take us all to the next level. So I that's what I heard. That's what I took away.
Yeah, that that opens the door. As you said, an access point. Yes, it opens the door. Be curious. If you want to learn, go up to people and ask. They love to talk about themselves. People love to tell you what they're doing. And so that warms things up. And now you can have conversations. But yes, that opens the doors, being curious and wanting to learn from somebody.
Yeah. Jeff, I'm going to let everyone in on a little bit of secret here too. But I was also very much an introvert. Very much so. If I brought my parents on, which actually might be a fun conversation to bring them on to talk about, but they couldn't get me to talk to anything. My own grandma told me that I need to improve my small talk skills. That's pretty crazy, isn't it? That's pretty deep. But what I really resonated there, Jeff, and for all of the introverts out there who are listening to this podcast and wanting to get involved, I think the key is find something to study, like do what you do best, like which is to be introverted. Maybe you're really good at analyzing things like Jeff is and like I am, right? You go in there and learn something, right? Now take that knowledge and try to talk with someone about it. And then you'll start to learn little things here and there from other people. And then curiosity will naturally come out because it'll either not align up with what you heard or what you read online or what you've been hearing from podcasts, or maybe it does. And then maybe there's other things you can work with. And then just like anything else, Jeff, I think that it's just a skill. You know, it's a muscle that has to get built over time. And believe it or not, the networking, it gets easier over time. That's for me, like it's hard to imagine you going out and like just getting energy from talking with people during breaks in an event. Like that to me was like, I was so scared of that. Right. But you do eventually, like you have like a common vocabulary that you develop with these other investors and you're speaking the same language and then you're hearing their take on things. And it's all about that curiosity. So Jeff, really great stuff here. This is really good for some people out there.
The one thing that I would say, and the difference between the introverts and the extroverts, I think that introverts, when you're out doing a lot of networking, it's draining. I think extroverts get energy from it. So a lot of times, like if I've been talking a lot, if I've been on the phone a lot, if I've been doing a lot, I get exhausted and I kind of, when I'm all done, I'll pull back and just want some me time. That's how I wind down. And the extroverts are saying, oh, let's go out to dinner. Let's all go out and party. Let's go out to the bars. Let's go dance. Yeah. Let's go do what else? Because they seem to gain energy from it. So I think that's more, you know, you see the difference between introverts and extroverts, and they're going out late at night and I go to bed early. You know, and I need me time to regain my strength. I need me time. Mm-hmm. I need to get away and just be by myself and maybe sit down with my computer or something. Then I have the energy to go and do it again. But I think the extroverts, for some reason, they just thrive on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can relate with that so much.
Yeah. And Jeff, you know, like you've been doing this for a while now and you've scaled and you've created such wonderful success. My question is, what about real estate investing continues to surprise and delight you?
Well, I think it's such a great opportunity to increase your net worth. But the thing is, you know, there's just nothing else out there that has such a diverse range of things that you can do and still bring in more funds. I mean, right now I'm in a spot that, you know, most of the stuff I'm doing is for legacy wealth to hand down to my kids and my grandkids and to help them out in their life. I could quit if I wanted to. But then what would I do then? You know, and the funny part of it is coming in as an introvert is the part that I want to do most and I enjoy doing most is working with investors and talking to people. And
that's fascinating.
It's you know, I mean, so I've come 360 because this is the piece now that I'm doing is raising money. And I'm not doing all those other things, which is the acquisition part and doing this, me being the main GP and all that. I don't need to do any of that. I'll let somebody else run the deal. I would rather just be back being the equity raiser. And I hold people's hands as far as, you know, passive investors that want to learn about the business and I'll educate them on the business. I love doing that. I'll talk to people for hours about the business. But you know, which years ago, nobody would have ever believed that.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, I think I'm hearing a lot of myself in you because this is exactly what has happened to me. I got so jazzed up by what real estate investing can provide to people that now I'm spending so much time educating people that don't know about it and what it can enable. And I'm finding that the teaching part of it is where I'm getting the most joy. So that's why I really enjoy, especially talking with couples, because there's an extra layer of like, you know, relationship dynamic that needs to be worked out. And it's a very fine balance that both Sophie and I have kind of refined over the years because we've been communicating well with each other and putting in the work there. And so we love that aspect of it. And I also love the analytical part of it. I love underwriting and I love all of that stuff. I love building spreadsheets. So it feels like we have a lot in common. And so I can completely relate with how your personality changes based on you find what you really, you don't know what your passion is until you start getting out and comfortable, like you said, and discovering what it is that actually you're good at. And then you just get energy from doing that well. So just something that I noticed that we share in common.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could give or take the analysis part anymore, but I mean, I can look at a spreadsheet and I can analyze it and I can look at that, you know, because I need to when I'm bringing investors into deals, but it's the relationships I enjoy that much, that much more. So I
get it.
So I've phased through that, but yeah, definitely, you know, I've grown from this business and I didn't start this until I was in my mid 50s. I'm an old guy.
Hmm. You know? I was going to say you're going on 29 right now.
Yeah, there you go. Like Jack Benny, who's if anybody knows who Jack Benny is, but yeah, he was celebrating the third anniversary of his 29th birthday or something.
Love that. So yeah. What I wanted to ask you before we head into the rapid round here is maybe can you share either a really tough moment or the toughest deal that you've had? I would like to expand on that a little bit, whatever you'd be willing to share with us.
Well, I could, since we closed on that 225 unit, I could tell you that was a tough deal. There was a lot of deferred maintenance that we weren't aware of that didn't show up in our due diligence. There was a lot of things, problems. I mean, I did the sewer scopes during due diligence, but we only did the sewer scopes up to the buildings, okay, to see what was going on and all the plumbing. We didn't really think about going all the way into the buildings. Big mistake, because we found out when we closed on the property, we had one building, 8 units. I mean, the whole property is 225, but the one building was 8 units. Well, the sewer line had collapsed. Oh, it had collapsed and dirt was going in. Oh, and so the seller was actually working on it when we closed, and the contract that he had made prior to selling, the guy fulfilled the contract, but that didn't finish the job. And so that building was an albatross around our neck for 2 years, because they had dug underneath it. They had rain had got in it. The foundation was going, you know, that was, you know, an amazing issue that we had to get through. As well as I had a situation that told me your gas line broke, and the gas line going from the street all the way to my boilers. And so let's fix it. And they said, well, it could be 6 figures. And we said, what? And finally, when they came back and said, oh, it's only going to be $30,000. We jumped for joy at $30,000. Yeah. You know, we were so happy. But, you know, the big thing, the big takeaway that I would tell people is make sure you're not underfunded. Make sure you've got plenty of cushion in your capital budget, especially if you're buying older properties. Right now, I'm trying to stay away from anything that's older than 1980s. Because there's always surprises. But otherwise making sure that you have plenty of capital for contingencies, especially on the older buildings. And even on newer buildings, you do get surprises. I had a building that was 3 years old. That 20 unit I bought was 3 years old. And we still had water issues where I think the guy glued the PVC pipe with chewing gum. That we had issues, you know, you shouldn't have plumbing issues on a 3-year-old building. So it does happen though.
You know,
but main thing, enough money and enough runway with your lending sources, not running out of time.
Absolutely. You can't make that up, using chewing gum to bond plumbing together. That's pretty innovative.
That's what it seemed like, the way the pipes. Well, the thing is, one of the funny thing on the where the pipe came into the unit. Okay. The PVC pipe came up and then did a 90 and went into the building. The only thing is the 90 was, you can't see that. The 90 was more like that. And so it's already stretching. And if you know Texas, the soil moves. So you've got that movement between the house and the pipe. And so on all of the units, they had problems with that. And we ended up having to replace most of those because they had to stretch that 90 and made it so tight that there was no flexibility.
Wow.
So, and this was on a new building. So it was just,
That's really discouraging, but thank you for the message. It's good advice for people. So
due diligence is critical.
Due diligence. That's right. Due diligence.
Wait, I want to ask,
and flexibility.
Jeff, what markets are you investing in? So your first one was in Texas. What part of Texas?
The first one was in Harlingen, Texas, which is near Brownsville. If you're familiar with there, it's down there near where SpaceX is someday going to be doing their launches.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Nice.
Then we went to Houston, and then the other part of Texas I was in was Amarillo. And now I'm back in Houston with 150 unit I'm involved with in Houston. And now this 400 unit that we're getting involved with also in Houston, but also I'm in Ohio, Georgia, and Arizona.
Excellent. Man, it sounds like you got a lot of experience dealing with all types of weather and soil types. So I cannot wait to pick your brain in a few weeks here, actually next week. It'd be great to see you in Austin. So we are, I think we're at the end of the normal part of the show. We're at the point now where we're going to be doing what's called our rapid round, which is five questions that we ask every guest. And then we like to judge our guests based on their answer. No, I'm just kidding.
I got a ranking, huh?
That's right. Yeah, no. So we're gonna go ahead and ask you these questions, and they're meant to be answered quickly. So maybe Sophie can help with the rapid round.
All right, Jeff. So the first question is, what book has had the biggest impact on you and why? And we ask that it not be Rich Dad or the Bible. So we get those answers a lot.
Well, then let's go with the E-Myth.
Good book. Nice. Nice.
Awesome.
And if people wanted to emulate your success, what's the first actionable thing that they could do to follow in your footsteps?
Network. Find other people that are doing what they're doing, and find somebody that's a little bit farther ahead of them than they are. Try not to get involved with somebody that's equal as you as on their education. You get a lot more if you find someone that's a few steps ahead.
And what did you use to find your first networking event? Did you use meetup.com or BiggerPockets?
Well, I had meetups myself that I was doing, but then I went to conferences, you know, that I met a lot of other people.
Right.
Nice. And Jeff, what small thing do most people not know about you?
What don't they know about me? That I road bike, and I try to get in about 70 miles a week on my road bike.
Cool. Wow. Awesome.
Another thing to ask you in Austin. That's awesome.
Yeah. I wish I could have a bike out there, but you know,
it's a great place.
And how do you like to unwind and restore your creative juices?
I usually take my dog for a walk or play with my grandkids. One of those two, or I have a hot tub. I'll go out and sit in my hot tub for a while.
Nice.
And then last question is, what's your favorite vacation spot?
Hawaii probably would be, I guess, the quick answer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the weather in California is so nice. You need to take a break from it and go to Hawaii, you know? So
it is. Yeah. About that.
All right. Well, very cool, Jeff. Thank you so much for all this. Like, this was great. Like, we learned so much about introversion and making this work and goal setting and mindset. So thank you so much for coming on the show. But before you leave, or before we end the show, why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about how they can find out more about what is going on in your world, and maybe even to participate and partner up with you on something?
Well, the one thing is I'm very active in Clubhouse. So on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4:00 Pacific time, we open up the room and have conversations opened up to people. We just talk. And I've met some awesome people through Clubhouse. And I actually, one lady, I actually had the opportunity to meet her in Houston that I had met on Clubhouse. So that's the main way. You can go to my website. I'm not real active in there, but that's www.synergeticig.com. You know, or reach out to me at jeff@synergeticig.com.
Excellent. Perfect. And we'll go ahead and put those two info points for people to be able to contact you in the show notes. And for all of you listeners who have been listening to this entire thing all the way to the end, I want to thank you as well as Jeff. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great conversation. I've had so much fun. And all the listeners out there, please, if you guys want to hear more conversations like this, please like and subscribe our content on wherever you're listening to this, whether it's YouTube, if you're watching it. We have this the video feed of Sophie and I and Jeff and all of our guests on YouTube. So you can view it there and like and subscribe and comment, engage with us. We want to get better and want to learn more. And we want to work our way up that algorithm so that we get more exposure to more people. So please, you know, interact with us. And so we're really looking forward to learning more about you and your goals. And with that being said, I think that's all that we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's great.
So Jeff, thanks once again for coming on. It was a blast having you.
And thank you guys so much. This was fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you guys in Austin.
It's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right, everyone. This is Derek.
And this is Sophie.
We're signing off for today. Have a great day, guys.